From WNYC in New York and Colorado Public Radio, this is Ask a Legal State, a national conversation about pot. I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC, along with Anne Marie Awad from Colorado Public Radio, and host of their new podcast about legal cannabis called On Something. And joining us now for a Legal State Reporters Roundtable and a Give Advice to States Like Mine free-for-all are Steve Carmody, reporter and producer at Michigan Public Radio, Mina Kim, evening anchor and the Friday host of Forum on KQED in San Francisco, Christian Foden-Wenzel, reporter and producer for Oregon Public Radio, and Paris Alston, associate producer for Radio Boston at WBUR.
We invite your phone calls for this Ask a Legal State free-for-all. All this segment with legal states so well presented, we will only take calls from people in non-legal states to ask a legal state, as the title of the program states, with any question that you might have on anything at all about the experience of being a legal state. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255.
Or ask a question via our hashtag, which is #WeedToKnow, #WeedToKnow on Ask a Legal State, a national conversation about pot. And let's just go around the horn to start out to Mina in California, Christian in Oregon, and Paris in Massachusetts. And I'd like each of you to tell people in states like mine that's debating whether to do this what you think is the best thing and the worst thing so far about legal cannabis in your state. Mina, can you start?
Sure. I think one of the things that's been a real challenge for the state of California is that there aren't a lot of people transitioning yet to the legal market. I mean, there's an estimated 80% of consumers that are still going to their illegal weed dealers. And so one of the things that that's being blamed on is actually the fact that California has a tax structure where, while it went with a 15% state excise tax, with local governments free to add their own taxes on sales and growing, in some cities, you might see the tax rate end up being 40% or more, which is fine if we didn't experience what we just did, which was a revenue shortfall. So the projection for us in terms of cannabis tax revenue last year was about $185 million. California got $84 million of that. So it fell short by more than $100 million. And right now, state lawmakers are trying to figure out ways to lower the state tax rate so that they can bring up those revenues and get more people buying legally.
All right. Let's go to Christian in Oregon. A best thing and or a worst thing?
Yeah, actually, the best and the worst thing are the same for me here. What Oregon did when we started to grow cannabis and make it legal was to allow everybody to do it, mom and pop. So we didn't want one big company to come in and be kind of, the Budweiser of cannabis. And that allowed, so they put low bar to get a license, and you could do it. So lots and lots and lots of people came in. And it's been very successful at producing a heck of a lot of cannabis. The trouble is now, 2.5-3 years down the road, is we have something like, I say it's like 6.5 years worth of cannabis sitting on shelves that has yet to be used at the current rate of use. And as we produced, we were producing twice as much that could be used. So now we're kind of awash in marijuana. And obviously the problem is when a farm has grown all that stuff.
I hate to jump in here, but I keep hearing all the people in the control room. I can't hear anything else.
Oh, and that's Steve in Michigan, right? So we're gonna get that fixed. Paris in Massachusetts, what would you say is the best thing and or the worst thing about legalization in Massachusetts so far?
Yeah, so for the best thing, I would say the fact that it has been decriminalized, and that actually happened in 2008 when voters voted to decriminalize marijuana in Massachusetts. But as a result of that, I think with the rollout of legal recreational sales, more people have been included in this, and there's been a real concentrated effort to include people in this industry who have disproportionately been harmed by marijuana drug law enforcement. But that kind of has a little bit of a double bind to it, because the whole rollout of recreational marijuana in Massachusetts, legal recreational marijuana, has been kind of slow, much slower than people anticipated. I think part of that is because the state wants to do it right. But as voters and as consumers, a lot of people have been frustrated with the limited amount of stores and the high prices in those stores, and the fact that those people who were supposed to be getting some sort of redemption from this have been kind of really waiting for a long time, longer than they expected.
And Steve from Michigan Public Radio, I think you can hear me now. And
I can hear you now.
sorry about that technical glitch. Since your state is in the development stage, voters just passed it in November, but sales haven't begun, I gather. I'm curious if you think Michigan learned one or two top specific things from the experience of states that went before that are affecting how you're doing it.
Well, absolutely. That's been one of the things that the regulators in the state and the state elected officials have been trying to learn from the oversupply that Oregon has suffered from, the taxation issues that California has suffered from, and just general rollout that obviously every state seems to have difficulty with. We legalized recreational use in November by the voters. It took effect in December, but the way the law was set up, actual sales of recreational use will not begin until the beginning of 2020, so that the state can do the re-regulations that have to be done in order to make it work.
All right. So we will continue with Ask a Legal State in a minute with our roundtable of advice givers from four legal states, plus the fifth of our co-host, Anne Maria Wadd from Colorado Public Radio. And we're going to start taking questions from people in non-legal states with whatever you want to know about legal recreational marijuana in any legal state as Ask a Legal State continues.
I grab a tell her, let me practice line. Slow it down for a second. Break it down, ooh, she said, let me lick this blunt, slow it down for a second, break it down, ooh, we deserve.
From WNYC in New York and Colorado Public Radio, this is Ask a Legal State, a national conversation about pot. I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC, along with Anne Maria Wadd from Colorado Public Radio, and host of their new podcast about legal cannabis called On Something. Now, people, you may know the public radio programs On Being or On the Media. This is not that. This is On Something, the new podcast On Something, the
That's
new podcast
right.
from Anne Marie. And our guests, as we're doing a legal state reporters roundtable and a give advice to states like mine that are considering it free for all, are Steve Carmody, reporter and producer at Michigan Public Radio, Mina Kim, evening anchor and Friday host of the program Forum on KQED in San Francisco, Christian Foden-Wenzel, reporter and producer for Oregon Public Radio, and Paris Alston, associate producer for Radio Boston at WBUR.
And Paris, I want to get started with you. I've seen that many localities in Massachusetts have opted out of legal marijuana sales. Can you talk about what some of their concerns were?
Yeah. So a lot of the cities and towns in Massachusetts weren't too keen on letting pot shops set up in their neighborhoods, not only because there's, you know, still a bit of a stigma around marijuana use, but also people were concerned about how close these businesses were going to be to schools or other places where youth might be and might be influenced to try marijuana. And some were also concerned about traffic. I mean, when a pot shop opens in your neighborhood, it is presumed that a lot of people are going to flock to it and try to cash in on that and try to experiment with that. And so and we did see that when the first two pot shops opened in Massachusetts, there was the traffic was heavy in those two places. And but there are a lot of cities and towns are setting their own specific provisions for where these pot shops can be, how they can operate and interact with the community to help quell some of those fears. But some of them are just opting out of it altogether.
We see that here in Colorado as well. There's carve-outs in the law for cities to either have pot shops or not. We have cities that have decided to do medical sales only. I'm really interested to see if that's happening in other states as well. Mina in California?
In terms of the what's happening in California, you mentioned what in terms of pot shops? Sorry, I missed that.
Individual municipalities choosing to opt out of sales.
Yes, there have been quite a few who have opted out, which is caused a problem with access in the state. And so one of the reasons that people feel like legal tax revenue is low is because of the fact that they have to drive really far to get to a city that's allowed it in their location. And so the other thing that's been hard too is that in order to get a state license to open a pot shop, you have to have your city have laws on the books that allow it. So that's also slowed down the issuing of licenses. And again, when you have less, when you have fewer businesses or storefronts out there, you're going to have fewer people frequenting them. And again, you're going to just have that robust black market stay robust.
Let's take another phone call. Virginia in the Bronx, you're on Ask a Legal State. Hi, Virginia.
Hi, Brian. I really hate to be disappointed in something that you're doing, but I am so disappointed that in all of these 3 hours, there's been no serious discussion about, you know, those of us who don't want to be exposed to pot. I don't want to be smelling it walking down the street. And so I'm wondering, are there regulations about that in the legal states? And the other real serious concern I have is about, you know, the smell from one apartment to another. And it's not just about, you know, what it smells like. It's about getting high in your own apartment from somebody else's pot in their apartment. We have a wood frame three family house, and there's there's my family in two of the apartments, but we rent the other apartment, and it's a wood frame house that is not possible to seal anything off, right? So I want to know from the legal states what kind of rights do, you know, people like me who don't want exposure have.
Right. Well, I will say we've been dealing with the pros and the cons in all kinds of topics over these 3 hours. But what about her question? Let's see. Can we start with Mina in California on that? I'm sure many people, once it gets legalized recreationally and use increases, have the same kinds of concerns that Virginia does.
Yes, California in particular has really strong laws when it comes to secondhand smoke. And so they have instituted very similar ones related to marijuana here. So in our state, because the regulations are so strong, that has been kind of welcome, especially in the Bay Area where I am, the fact that they had a model to go to when it came to, you know, smell and smoke.
And Christian in Oregon?
Yeah, we have quite strong Indoor Clean Air Act laws here, but there is movement in the legislature to try and reduce them for cannabis. We've actually had some people who want to set up cannabis cafes. So at the moment, people say, well, it's legal, but there's nowhere actually legal to go and smoke it, because a lot of people live in an apartment complex and they've signed an agreement where they would not smoke it. You're not allowed to smoke it in public. You're not allowed to smoke it in the parks. So there is this movement to try and have cafes. And the legislature say, well, we're not going to allow smoking in the cafes. But what they want to do, maybe a loophole, is to allow edibles and tinctures in the cafe and then have an outdoor part where people can smoke outside and it's blocked from view from people. But it's quite controversial. And a lot of people, like you say, they're not happy about going around smelling cannabis smoke everywhere.
And Marie in Colorado, you want to dive in on this too?
Yeah, very similarly to the last two responses, Colorado has a pretty robust Colorado Clean Indoor Air Act, which covers cigarette smoke, and also cannabis smoke was added to that. And what Christian said is actually sort of happening in Colorado. There's been discussion about making a carve out for cannabis smoke so that we can have social consumption areas. And we do have this social consumption license program here in Denver that I think only two businesses have participated in. It has a really low participation rate. Some people think that allowing smoking would increase the participation. But similarly, yeah, you can go to these places and just take edibles or vape or something like that. But as for outside on the street, I mean, there's not really a way to, if there are people smoking in the street, there's not really a way to stop that unless cops come up and cite them.
Well, I think this is going to be a growing issue in legal states and non-legal states for that matter, that just as cigarette smoking is restricted, so restricted in many public places, including outdoor places where it used to be legal, that the same rules are going to have to be enforced now that public smoking is taking place so much more. Even though it's illegal in a lot of places, enforcement is going to become a question. And Virginia, I just want to follow up with one other thing that you said. Did you say that you're a landlord, you rent out something?
Yes.
Because you have the right, I think, to, as some co-op buildings do and condo buildings do, to say you may not smoke in your own home. That's a rule in some buildings in New York City. I presume if your tenant's marijuana smoke is really disturbing you, I think you can do that.
Okay, well, I'll check it out.
Virginia.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that earlier, too, that landlords in Colorado do have the right to say you're not allowed to smoke on this property. At the end of the day, it is to the discretion of the person who owns the building.
Jacob in Atlanta, you're on Ask a Legal State. Hi, Jacob.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
So one of the great things I think about legalizing is that you can start to, you know, do research on marijuana and you know, start to educate people. I guess my question is, are there any programs in states where it's legal where you can educate younger, I guess, adolescents or, you know, teenagers growing up that can eventually start smoking, you know, teach them about safeties of smoking? Because like in Atlanta or in Georgia, we have like the DARE program, but their message is just don't do drugs. So I was wondering if you guys have any programs like that but are saying, hey, you know, this is okay to do, but here's how you do it properly.
Yeah,
but,
and Steve in Michigan, let me go to you on this. I wonder, as Michigan now just begins to become a legal state after your referendum in November, whether there's something that's integrated into the launch of this to put those kinds of nuanced communication efforts to young people into place.
It's been an interesting transition for the state because for the last 10 years we've had legalized medical marijuana. But with the legislative leadership being largely Republican and anti-weed, and our former attorney general for most of that time having originally been the leader against legalizing medical marijuana, Michigan has been very slow to adopt educational programs targeting young people. We now have a new governor. We have a new attorney general. We have new leadership in the state, or much of the state legislature, but that's still largely Republican. So as far as developing that educational component that would be reasonable to develop over the next 8 months, at this point, we're not seeing a lot of motion movement in that area. But it would be something that makes sense since we are talking about something that is legal now and will be legally for sale in about 8 months.
Alex in Hamden, Connecticut. You're on Ask a Legal State. Hi, Alex.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for the conversation. What I wanted to discuss is how are employers considering drug testing or not drug testing prospective employees with regards to marijuana?
Interesting question. Paris and Massachusetts have the employer testing standards and practices become, have they changed? Are employers doing it less because it's now legal?
So I don't have numbers of how much people maybe have decreased or increased their drug testing, but in Massachusetts has largely left it up to the employer. Even though marijuana has been legalized here, drug testing laws stay the same. So if an employer wants to test an employee for marijuana, they can, and they can create their own rules from what I know for how to reprimand that if they decide to reprimand that. But that is something that I've had a large question about because if it's legal, then you would presume that you would be able to consume marijuana with no consequence. But that's not the case because especially in the case of like a private employer or anything like that, it's up to their discretion.
Anne-Marie?
Can I just jump in here quickly?
Christian in Oregon, go ahead.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about cannabis is I understand that you can test and you can find out whether it's in the system for like 30 days. So it's not like alcohol where after, you know, 24 hours, it's no longer noticeable that you were out a few nights ago having a drink.
Well, you know, even in the non-legal state of New York, the New York City Council just passed a bill banning workplace testing for many categories of things. Employers could still choose to do it for prospective employees in certain public health and safety concern situations. But for the average employer where that doesn't apply, New York City Council, even in a non-legal state, just banned it. But of course, employers, other than the public sector, are private actors, and it's been assumed, I think, until now, that whether it's legal to use anything in a state, alcohol, marijuana, whatever, that the private employer has the right to set standards for their workers. But Anne-Marie, you wanted to add something from Colorado.
Yeah, actually, it's really interesting. This drug testing question has sort of kind of collided head on with Colorado's ridiculously low unemployment rate for the last several years. So as employers have really struggled to find people for jobs, more and more of them have really considered just letting go of a drug testing requirement. And then the other thing to know is, yeah, if it is an employer, say, for example, Kaiser Permanente or big major health insurer, you know, they have offices here, they have offices in California, both legal states, but they drug test because it is up to their discretion.
But I should also say, this is Mina in San Francisco, to pay attention to local laws, because in San Francisco, for example, it's illegal to do any kind of random drug testing. But in other parts of the state, you could definitely, you know, do drug testing, particularly in the pre-employment process, like the interview process typically is where it's more allowed. Once you are hired, there are lots of regulations against, you know, what your employees are doing, you know, on their private time.
Let's take another call. David in Brooklyn has a question. Hi, David. You're on Ask a Legal State.
Hey, how you doing? I'm from Colorado originally, and I've lived in New York City for almost 20 years. Since marijuana has been legalized in Colorado, I have seen rent prices in Colorado go through the roof, and friends of mine have been priced out of neighborhoods they've lived in for 20 years. So how do we prevent that from happening if marijuana is legalized here in New York?
I mean, so speaking from Colorado, the huge spike in rent prices is due to just so many different things. The population in Colorado has increased something like 20% in the last several years. And this is the problem of people being priced out is a problem in a lot of major cities. I mean, Mina, I'm sure you see that where you're at.
Absolutely.
And there's, of course, there's a lot of different things that contribute to that, right? I'm not sure. I mean, I moved out of New York because I couldn't afford it anymore, and weed was not legal in 2013 when I left.
I'm curious to go around the horn as we start to run out of time here. In each of the states with experience, do you think if your state voted again, would cannabis legalization pass again? Mina, in California, do you think so?
I think it definitely would. I think that was where things were going culturally. I think also there's just a strong sense of equity in the state of California. There's been a lot of movement to expunge marijuana convictions, and that's been a really big deal for a lot of communities of color, because they're now able to, you know, have a better chance at jobs and loans and housing. So I think that aspect of it has also become more apparent, especially in the Bay Area where I am, and I think there'd be a lot of support for it.
Christian in Oregon, same thing.
Yeah, I'm sure it would pass again, and one of the reasons is the amount of money we're getting, hundreds of millions of dollars come in for this. And to give you an idea, well, cannabis consumption is about 80% of alcohol consumption at the moment, but alcohol consumption is pretty level, you know, from year. Cannabis consumption is going up about 20% a year. So it's only growing and it's large, and I would think that it would get passed again here easily.
And Paris in Massachusetts, any buyer's remorse on the part of the electorate?
I don't think so. I think people would totally pass it again if they had to vote again. I think that people, obviously everyone is restless and wishes that it would have been rolled out sooner. But I think for them, the benefits are outweighing that potential of the problems.
And so. Steve Carmody from Michigan Public Radio.
Quickly, it has been all of 6 months.
I know. So what's the biggest argument you're having in Michigan about rollout?
Well, what we're seeing with a lot of local communities, we've had more than 200 opt out of having legalized sales in their community when that begins. But it, in a way, it reminds me of my experience growing up in New Jersey in a dry borough, back at a time when you had a lot of communities that were dry, didn't allow alcohol sales. I expect that over time that many of those communities will allow it when there are a few years have gone by and they see what happens in other communities. So at this point, I'd say there's no buyer's remorse. There's more curiosity about what happens next.
Well, I want to thank all of you for participating in this roundtable. We really, really appreciate it. To all of you public radio reporters from around the country. And I want to thank everybody so much for listening to Ask a Legal State. Along with Anne Marie Awad from Colorado Public Radio, I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC in New York. And Anne Marie, do you want to just tell people about this podcast that you've just launched on the topic called On Something?
That's right. We're actually launching later this summer, but if people want to get involved and kind of sign up for our email list, you can go to onsomethingpod.com. And really the goal with our podcast is sort of to talk about legalization a little less like how we've been talking about it on this special, not so much facts and figures and stats, but more about people's personal feelings and personal stories when it comes to marijuana. So again, that's onsomething.org. We are launching June 18th. And I hear also that there's been quite a bit of pot on WNYC's air lately, right?
Yes, depending on how you mean that. And I will say as we finish up here, listeners, that if you're interested, I host a weekday call-in show every Monday through Friday on WNYC in New York or at WNYC.org from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time. And yes, we just completed a 15-part series on issues in legal weed called Reefer Managed. We did a week on social justice, a week on public health, and a week on cultural change in the legal era. You can hear that if you're interested at WNYC.org/legalstate. Anne-Marie, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for doing it with me.
Ditto. Thank you so much for having me. And it's onsomething.org, by the way. I said it wrong earlier.
Listeners, thanks for listening. Happy Easter. Happy Passover. Happy 420.